Dessert Flower, directed by Rudy Valley. Tonight's star, Morris Evans.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. If this program has a favorite actor, that actor is Maurice Evans. This brilliant Englishman, regarded by the critics of London and New York as the finest player on the English-speaking stage, will be heard tonight as Henry VIII in Master of the Revels by the late Don Marcus. In addition, Graham,
you will meet Edith Barrett and Vincent Price.
Currently featured in the Mercury Theater production, Shoemaker's Holiday. Miss Barrett will play Snow White to Mr. Price's Prince Charming in a comedy sequel to the Walt Disney masterpiece. Title, Ever After.
Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, Irving Caesar.
In which Mr. Caesar's safety song points a moral to a tale of woe. We hope you will make sure your children hear Tommy, Betty, and Irving.
Fred Bradner.
Equestrian director of Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus, the performance boss of the biggest show on earth. In addition, also, a bright new set of tunes featuring, a bit later, the score of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. On the downbeat, gentlemen. Get there, so you'd better beware. It's a long, long way to your arms, though you keep me away, I'll be having my day. I knew you were mine the very first time I met you. You'd better unbend, because in the end I'll get you. It's a long, long way to your heart, but I'm going to get there. And when I get there, I'll be there a long, long time. Where we don't have much room for crocuses or robins, there's one sure sign of spring, the arrival of the big circus in Madison Square Garden. Tonight we want you to meet a gentleman who represents the spirit and tradition, the heart and soul of the circus, Fred Bradner, equestrian director for Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey, the greatest show on earth. The uninitiated refer to him as the ringmaster. That title, he tells us, is inaccurate. The equestrian director is really the boss of the big top once the show is underway. It is his shrill, piercing whistle, sound beloved of boyhood, that starts and stops the action, whips the vast performance along its scheduled channel, and holds it all together in a spangled, glittering bundle. He's the top-hatted, mustachioed, handsome fellow you wanted to be when you were a kid. The whistle sounds. And enter Fred Bradner of the Big Show. Mr. Bradner, we circus fans were sorry to hear that you were injured recently. How did it happen? One of the circus animals, perhaps?
Nothing so romantic, Mr. Valley. I fell through a coal hole in Lansing, Michigan. I was walking along in the snow, and I fell through. I've been on crutches ever since.
But the show goes on.
It goes on in spite of worse troubles than my broken leg, Mr. Valley. Fortunately, our strike has been settled, and fortunately, I can whistle sitting down.
How long have you been connected with circuses, Mr. Bradner?
For 38 years, 6 months, 2 weeks, and 4 days.
You have it figured down rather closely.
And I have a very good reason for that, Mr. Valley.
An interesting reason?
Not only interesting, romantic. Very romantic. You see, I married into the circus.
Oh, you don't come from a circus family, then?
Oh, no. I was once a cavalry officer in the French army.
And you fell for a circus lady?
No, she fell for me. She fell off a horse right in my lap, so I married her.
Just like that. Where did all this happen?
In Paris. You understand? When a young army officer in Strasbourg gets a leave, he naturally goes to Paris.
Oh, I can understand that, yes.
And in a circus in Paris, the boxes are very close to the performers. So Mrs. Brannan didn't have far to fall. After the show, I took her to supper at the Café Riche, and in 2 weeks, we were engaged.
Did your parents object?
Oh, my father was furious. He got me a job on a coffee plantation and bought me a ticket to Surabaya on the island of Java. So I cashed in the ticket and married a girl. As it turned out, I married a circus too.
Have you had a good life with both wives ever since?
Oh, Mr. Valley, I can honestly say I have loved every minute of it. It has been a very, very good life, yes.
Who would you say is the greatest circus performer you have ever seen in action?
Lillian Leitzell, of course. She was a truly great artist, Mr. Valley. A great artist.
And among the clowns?
An American, Slivers Oakley.
I'm afraid I've never heard of him.
Few circus clowns get to be as well known as radio clowns. Mr. Valley, you have heard of Marceline, Toto, and the Fratellinis.
Yes, I think I have.
Well, Oakley was a greater clown than any of those. The greatest, I think. He killed himself a few years ago.
Now, to get back to your own job, how many times do you blow that whistle in one show?
I have 248 cues in the complete show this year.
And you don't have them written out? You remember them all?
Oh, yes. It is not so very difficult.
I'd hate to try it, and I've had some little experience keeping a show moving along myself.
May you would like to borrow my whistle?
No, I'm afraid I'd wake up some of the band, poor lads. Here's something I've always wanted to know about a circus. Do performers make a practice of missing a stunt the first time just to make it look hard?
Absolutely not. Every miss slows up the show, and we work on a time schedule just like a radio program. No, we never miss it if we can help it, Mr. Valley.
You know, I've heard a lot about Gargantua, the gorilla, this year. Is he a friend of yours?
He is not. He gives me bad dreams. He gives everybody bad dreams.
Even the press agent?
Oh, no. The press agent thinks he's cute. Personally, I don't think I can stand to look at Gargantua in the old season. Either he goes or I go.
You're very fond of that whistle, I see.
I whistle for my supper, Mr. Valley, and I'm fond of my supper.
They tell me you're a good cook as well as an accomplished whistler.
I'm the best cook in the circus, Mr. Valley, and we've got some good cooks. You come around sometime, and I'll fix you up some choucroute au vin blanc at sauerkraut cooked in white wine.
Sounds good. I'll do that, Mr. Bradner.
You know, I listen to your show often when we're on the road, and one thing I have noticed.
What's that?
These interviews, you have a hard time getting a good finish for them.
Yes, we usually top them off with a bad gag and call it a day.
With me, it would be different.
How's that?
It's very simple. I'm gone, next act.
Thank you.
just as sweet as you are. Good night, angel. Good night.
Nowadays, housewives and mothers. Alice Faye number from Sally, Irene, and Mary. Title, I Got My Mind on Music. By this time, I suspect, practically everyone has seen Walt Disney's delightful Snow White. If you haven't seen it yet, you ought to. As Westbrook Pegler put it, quote, Snow White is the happiest thing that has happened in the world since the armistice, unquote. The picture is a work of perfection. And yet, what happened to Snow White and Prince Charming and the dwarfs after the final fade-out? Did they live happily ever after? We appointed Keith Fowler to imagine an answer and selected Edith Barrett and Vincent Price to act it out for you. Mr. Price, you may know, played Prince Albert to Helen Hayes' Queen Victoria last season. Miss Barrett has been starred in a long series of Broadway hits. Both are currently to the fore in Shoemaker's Holiday. Edith Barrett and Vincent Price in Ever After. Scene, the royal suite in the royal palace of the royal capital of the kingdom ruled by Prince Charming. It is the morning of the third wedding anniversary of Snow White and the Prince. The Prince is seated at the royal desk, reading royal papers of state. Snow White enters. He continues to read. Snow White speaks.
Good morning, dear.
Huh?
I said good morning, dear.
Oh.
Well, that settles that. Let me see. What's another way to start a conversation with your husband? I've got it. How are you feeling today, Charming?
Huh?
I said quite distinctly, how are you feeling today?
Who, me?
Will you please put down those papers?
Oh, hello, darling. I didn't realize you were here.
Of course you didn't. You never do. You never realize I'm even alive unless I scream at you like a...
Like a cockatoo.
Go ahead, call me vile names.
Now, look, darling, I simply must dispose of this work in the next hour. I'm working, darling. Now, just run along like a nice little prince.
Charming, how many times do I have to ask you not to whistle that awful tune?
You taught it to me, darling.
Yes, dear, but that was 3 long years ago. Besides, you can't whistle well at all. Why, even Dopey could whistle better than you.
There you go again. All I ever hear is Dopey, Dopey, Dopey. Why didn't you marry Dopey?
Sometimes I think I did.
Now, listen, Snowdrop. I don't know what it is, but recently there's something about you that brings out the worst in me. You never stop nagging unless I yell at you like a...
Like a fiend.
Go ahead, call me vile names.
Isn't it strange? At one time I thought you were so handsome. I loved your eyes and your lips. But now I'm not even sure you have a face. It's always buried behind a pile of papers.
I've told you time and time and again it can't be helped. These papers are important. I have duties to perform, affairs of state.
A man's first duty...
is to his wife. I've heard that before. You have a bad habit of repeating yourself.
And I'll repeat myself again. A man owes his wife respect and consideration.
But I'm not a man.
For once, I agree with you.
I prefer to ignore cheap sarcasm, my dear. I am not a man because I'm a prince. I'm pledged to the service of my kingdom.
How fascinating. And just how do you plan to serve your kingdom today?
Well, in various ways. It's all written down here in these papers. At 10 o'clock, I shall attend a meeting of the Excalibur Home and Garden Club. I shall plant a tree.
Statesmanship requires so much intelligence.
At 2 o'clock, I shall be called upon by a delegation of amateur dragon killers. I shall step out on the balcony and bow to them.
My great, big, important prince.
At 4 o'clock, a group of wise men will appear at the palace and confer upon me a degree in higher mathematics.
What do you know about higher mathematics?
A silly question, my dear. This is an honorary degree.
I see. And where will I be while this is going on? Where will I be while you're planting your idiotic trees and bowing to beastly amateurs and taking degrees you'd never get if you weren't a prince?
I'm sure I don't know.
Or care. But I'll tell you. I'll be alone in my room, staring at the four walls, eating my heart out. This can't go on. I'm the most miserable, wretched girl in the world.
And I'm a brute, my dear. I'm a selfish, heartless monster. But I'd like to know one thing, just one little tiny thing. What in the devil have you got to complain about?
You ask me that. You ask me that. I think I'm going mad.
It's quite possible.
Do you remember all the things you said before we were married? All the things you promised?
I told you that I'd make you happy. And if you're not happy with all I've given you, well, you just don't want to be happy. Now, what other girl has a complete set of gold furniture? Name one. Go on, name one.
Must we be vulgar?
And what other girl eats the finest, richest foods every day? You've gained at least 10 pounds since we were married.
I've gained exactly 2 pounds, 3 ounces.
Pheasants for breakfast, swan's giblets for lunch.
Now, there's no need to brag about the palace menu. What are pheasants? What are swan giblets without love?
But I love you.
What?
I said I love you.
So this is romance. Did you hear yourself? Do you know how you said that? I love you. I think it will rain. It would serve you right if I packed up and went away.
Well, why don't you? Why don't you go right back to those 7 dwarves?
That's what I keep asking myself. Why don't I go back to dear little happy, sleepy, dopey, grumpy, bashful, dark, and...
Sneezy, I believe.
Guests are being announced. Yes, Harold?
Vietnam, that tour have come to pay their respects. Royal Highnesses. Vietnam, that their names are Mr. Doc and Mr. Grumpy.
Oh, it's my darling Doc and my adorable Grumpy.
I ask you to keep those peculiar creatures out of here?
I won't listen to another word. You can mistreat me, but you can't be impolite to my friends.
Oh, all right. Bring them in and lock up the silver.
Mr. Doc and Mr. Grumpy.
Oh, you angels. I've never been so happy in all my life. How are you, Doc?
Oh, I'm in fine fettle.
And how are you, Grumpy?
Rotten, thanks.
And now the prince wants to tell you how pleased he is to see you.
I'm pleased to see you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, your highness. Thank you, Grumpy.
What for?
Well, where are the other boys? Why didn't you all come over?
Well, we're sort of a delegation. Doc's got a speech to make. Make your speech, Doc.
Dear princess, we bring you beatings, greetings.
Oh, try it again.
Dear princess, I speak from a heart chilled with fear, filled with cheer.
Try it again.
Dear princess, on this day your feet sway, your sweet face glows.
What is it, Grumpy? He'll never get it out.
No, he wants to make a speech about your anniversary. Crazy idea. A lot of sentimental bunk.
Oh, you darlings. At least someone remembers. someone cares.
Would you mind clearing up this mystery? What anniversary are they talking about?
Ours, dear. Only ours.
Our?
Our anniversary, my charming prince. We were married 3 years ago today. Time flies, doesn't it?
What do you think of that? It completely slipped my mind.
Naturally.
Now, wait a minute. If you'd only give me a chance...
I've given you too many chances. Perfectly lovely, isn't it, when my friends have to tell my husband that he's been married for 3 years?
You mean he didn't know it?
He didn't even suspect it.
I always said he wasn't good enough for you.
Now you keep out of this, you little wart.
Don't you dare say that to Grumpy.
Snow White.
Don't you dare.
Snow White.
Yes, Doc.
Aren't you and the prince happy? Isn't he happy?
I'm afraid not, Doc.
Oh, this is dreadful. If you're not happy, it spoils my whole speech. And it was the speech of a peach. I mean, a peach of a speech. Oh, it was good.
I know it must have been grand, but it wouldn't suit the occasion. Prince Charming, this is the end.
The end of what?
Of our life together. From this hour forward, I will never darken your door again.
Dramatic, my dear, but not practical. Now, what would you do? Where would you go?
To the ends of the earth.
Now, let's be sensible. The ends of the earth are a long way off. If we're getting tired of... on each other's nerves, why, you can take another room and
no, my mind is made up. You have broken my spirit like a butterfly upon a wheel. I must leave.
All right, leave. Get out. I'll send a dozen flunkies to help you pack. And turn your crown over to the royal treasurer.
To think it should come to this. Ah, oh, bitter, bitter, bitter.
Poor child. Don't weep. Weep.
Don't stop her. She's enjoying herself.
You can come back and stay with us, Snow White. Kind of crowded, but I guess we can put up with it.
Bless you, Grumpy.
Oh, don't bless me. I ain't used to it.
I'll come with you now, Grumpy. I'll love to be back in our tiny house. And it will be so much nicer for the baby.
Nicer for the... Darling, did you say baby?
Yes.
You... You're...
Yes.
And I... Well, why doesn't somebody tell me about these things?
Well, I didn't suppose you'd be interested. After all, a baby is just a baby.
But it's mine.
Ours, dear. You might enjoy it for a few weeks, but then you'd stumble over it on your way to a cornerstone laying and not even know what it was.
Oh, that's where you're wrong. Grumpy, Doc, have a cigar. A baby. My baby.
Ours, dear.
Oh, yes, ours. Pardon me. Darling, I just had the most splendid idea.
Something to do with the affairs of state.
With us. The house in the woods would be nicer for the baby. Why can't we all go there? You and I and, it.
Hey, do you think our house is made of rubber?
That's right. We'd have to sleep in layers like a rake. A cake.
Grumpy, you've always done so much for me. But wouldn't you do one more thing?
Huh?
Wouldn't you let the prince and me live in your house if we let you all come here and live in the palace?
Well, you're asking a lot, but... Well, take it. The roof leaks anyhow.
Bless you, Grumpy.
Oh, don't bless me. I was getting darn tired of those woods anyhow.
When the baby comes, it can have my bed. I've got a nice mattress. I mean, nice mattress. It's stuffed.
Oh, darling, there's something we've forgotten. If you go away, who'll take care of the kingdom?
Oh, that's easy. I'll appoint Grumpy and Doc and the rest of the dwarves to act for me. Grumpy can be the executioner. He'll like that. And Doc can be the Speaker of the House.
That's wonderful. And Sleepy can be the First Lord of the Bedchamber.
And Happy can be the Court Jester.
And Sneezy can be the Court Physician.
And Bashful can wait on the ladies-in-waiting.
But what about Dopey? What can poor Dopey do?
Yes, that is a problem.
I have it. Dopey can make a lot of new laws. He's just the man for it.
Fine. When should we leave?
Today, at once. Paige... Take a proclamation and have it read to all the people.
Okay, princess.
Be it known that the prince and princess are leaving the palace for a sojourn of indefinite length. Be it known they have decided to live their own lives free of the trouble attendant upon the affairs of state. And be it known they are absolutely determined to live happily ever after.
Of course you will. No more quarrels, no more bites, fights, fights. This is the biggest pill, but the biggest thrill I've ever had.
Confidentially, Doc, I've got my fingers crossed.
WEAF, New York.
Lest we stand accused of cheap cynicism, permit me to add that Snow White and Prince Charming did live happily ever after. And moreover, they had three children, two boys and a girl. The boys later became famous as Richard the Lion-Hearted and Huckleberry Finn. And the little girl turned out to be Shirley Temple. And now, kiddies, the Royal Desserts Hour continues, with Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, Irving Caesar, and Morris Evans still to appear. With a bow to Walter Disney and with the hope that he didn't mind our spoofing, we open Act Two with a new medley from the Snow White score, arranged by our Elliot Jacoby, with the gentleman songsters, Vernice, Allery, and Yours Truly.
Can go wrong with a high, high ho,
high ho, high ho. It's home from earth we go. High ho, high ho, high ho ho. All seven in a row. High, high ho.
The combination of Tommy Riggs, Betty Lou, and Irving Caesar's safety campaign seems to be an extremely popular one, judging by our mail response. All of us, including Betty Lou, are happy about the whole thing. And one reason for that feeling lies in the fact that the notion can, we know, accomplish a great deal of good without being in any way solemn or preachy. Incidentally, friends of Tommy and Betty in Detroit will be able to see them, or him, in person beginning tomorrow at the Michigan Theater. Right now, or he or they are here. Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou.
Hello, Mr. Valley.
Hello, Betty Lou.
Oh, I guess I have to go now.
But you've just arrived here. Where are you going?
Home. I have to be spanked.
Spanked?
Yes, and I'd rather be spanked by my mommy than by my daddy, so I have to get home before my daddy does.
Oh. So you've been a naughty girl, Betty Lou.
How did you know, Mr. Valley?
Because little girls who haven't been naughty don't usually get spanked.
Why?
Because they don't. But suppose you tell me what you did.
Well, do you want to spank me, too?
No, of course I don't. I simply want to find out why you think you're going to get a spanking.
On account of the broom.
The broom? What broom?
The broom I was pushing in my baby brother's face.
Good heavens. Betty Lou, why were you pushing a broom in your baby brother's face?
To get him used to kissing my granddaddy.
Doesn't your baby brother like to kiss your granddaddy?
Oh, yes, he likes it a whole bunch, but granddaddy doesn't.
Why doesn't he like it?
Because my baby brother always chews on granddaddy's whiskers.
Well, I can see why your granddaddy wouldn't like that.
Oh, no, it makes my granddaddy awfully nervous.
Your granddaddy's a nervous man?
Yes, he has an awful time with his whiskers. They make him sneeze like everything, too.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your granddaddy, but by the way, where's Tommy?
Well, he's with my granddaddy.
Well, where's your granddaddy?
With Mr. Tommy.
Yes, yes, I know.
Well, if you knew, then why did you ask me for?
I mean, where are they?
Oh, they're in Macy's window.
Macy's window? What in the world are they doing in a department store window?
They're sitting there. Mr. Tommy is hunting through my granddaddy's whiskers.
Hunting through your granddaddy's whiskers? Betty Lou, what are you talking about?
About my granddaddy's whiskers.
Yes, yes. But you haven't told me yet how they got there.
Oh, they just grew there.
No. How your granddaddy and Mr. Tommy got in Macy's window.
Oh, you mean that?
Yes.
Well, they got in there after I opened the window.
You opened Macy's window?
Oh, no, I opened the window on my granddaddy's automobile.
Granddaddy's automobile? Where does your granddaddy's automobile fit in?
Right in with all Macy's nightgowns, too.
Oh, Betty Lou, I give up. First we have the broom, then your nervous granddaddy's whiskers, Macy's window, the automobile, and now nightgowns.
Yes, and maybe Mr. Tommy will get the bee, too.
The bee? What bee?
The bee that flew into the automobile.
Betty Lou, are you trying to tell me that your granddaddy and Mr. Tommy had an accident and smashed into Macy's window?
Oh, yes, because I was there, too, in the back seat.
You saw the bee come in the window?
Yes, that's when my granddaddy didn't see it.
Well, if he didn't see it, what caused the accident?
Maybe it was on account of something I said.
And what did you say?
I said, gee whiz, granddaddy, there's a bee in your whiskers. And boom, there we were in Macy's window.
I didn't know that they had bees in 33rd Street, Betty Lou.
Neither did Granddaddy. I guess that's what made him get nervous all of a sudden.
Yes, 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 yes. I know. There you were. Well, this seems to be a case for an expert. Mr. Caesar, what do you think?
Oh, hello, Mr. Caesar. Mr. Caesar, did you ever have a bee in your whiskers?
Betty Lou, I haven't any whiskers.
Well, if you did have whiskers, I'll bet you'd be nervous, too, if you got a bee in them, I'll bet.
I suppose I would, yes.
Besides, you'd look awful funny with whiskers, Mr. Caesar, even with a bee in them.
Now listen, Betty Lou, in my opinion, this whole accident is your fault.
Because I let the bee in?
No, because you talked to the driver from the back seat. Little girls and grown-up girls, too, should never, never distract the driver's attention by talking. Now, you pay close attention now, and I'll explain. Rudy.
talking to the driver may make him turn his head. He must watch the traffic lights, are they green or red? People who are walking, he has to watch them too. But if you keep on talking, then he'll be watching you. Cease your silly chatter, help him concentrate. Does it really matter? Won't your question wait? Try to help the driver, use some common sense, and you may help to save us from many accidents.
Gee whiz, I guess I should have let the bee go right ahead and sting Granddaddy, huh?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but in the future, I want you to be very careful about talking to the driver when you're in a car.
I will, Mr. Caesar.
That's a good girl.
Only gee whiz, I think those darned old bees ought to stay uptown, too. Talking to the driver may make him turn his head. He must watch the traffic lights.
Are they green or red? People who are walking, he has to watch them too. But if you keep on talking, then he'll be watching you. Cease your silly chatter, help him concentrate. Now does it really matter? Won't your question wait? Try to help the driver, use some common sense, and you may help to save us from many accidents.
Thank you. Thank you, Irving Caesar. That's good advice for grown-ups, too. And thank you, Betty Lou.
Oh, you mustn't thank me, Mr. McNamee. Until I learned Mr. Caesar's song of safety, I talked to the driver all the time.
But you don't do that anymore.
Oh, never. Only unless maybe in case of bees.
All right. No, Betty. I know, of course, you don't. And neither does any other little girl or boy, if they'll just stop to think. And to help mothers teach this safety lesson, we'll be happy to send you Irving Caesar's Song of Safety, Talking to the Driver. You get complete words and music, just as you have heard them sung by Irving Caesar and Betty Lou. It's the kind of song that costs 35 cents at the store. But to friends of Royal Desserts, we are making this special offer. If you will send us 3 package fronts from Royal Desserts, either Royal Gelatin or Royal Puddings, and send them before next Thursday.
Delightful was the day in gay Paris. I gave my heart away, oui, chérie. At a perfume counter on the Rue de la Paix, the flower-scented air in gay Paris encouraged me to care, oui, chérie. At a perfume counter on the Rue de la Paix, the conversation was blended with romance in May. But your vacation soon ended, and you went away. If you remember this, come back to me and say it with a kiss, oui, chérie. At a perfume counter on the Rue de la Paix.
presenting Morris Evans in The Master of the Revels by the late Don Marquis. New York has seen Mr. Evans as Romeo, as the Dauphin, in Catherine Cornell's Joan of Arc, as Napoleon, and as Shakespeare's Richard II. We eagerly await his Falstaff, so successful on the road, and his Hamlet. Falstaff, at least, is promised for the fall season after Mr. Evans returns from a holiday in England. Tonight, this great actor adds a new figure to his collection. Morris Evans as Henry VIII. Place, the great hall of Henry's palace in London. It is night. The room is brilliantly lighted. The entire court stands in a great semicircle about Henry. A hushed throng, waiting. Waiting with Henry for the sound of a cannon booming across London from the tower. A cannon that will mean that the Queen, Catherine Howard, has paid for her love affairs with her life. Henry has loved Catherine. As he awaits the sound of her doom, his mood is one of dull, agonized brooding, broken by violent outbursts of passion. He has been drinking heavily. As the curtain rises, he is staring ahead at a goblet of wine held in his two hands. Suddenly, wildly, he hurls the glass to the floor.
King's shirt!
Your Highness?
What's that drink the Scots make? Ask you something.
Uskuba.
Yes, Uskuba. It's got some strength to it. I don't know what the devil is the matter with the wine these days. There's nothing to it. You drink it, nothing happens. Kingston, bring me some of this Askew, what do you call it, stuff.
At once, Your Highness.
Norfolk?
Your Highness?
What's the matter with everybody tonight? They act as if they were waiting for something.
They are, Your Highness.
What? Everybody looks so stupid, so strange. What is it? Tell me, man. What are they waiting for?
For the cannon.
Cannon? The cannon? What cannon, Tom? What cannon, Charles?
Your Highness ordered that the cannon be fired to let you know.
Where's the Queen? Where's the Queen?
The Queen, Your Highness, the Queen.
I know. Charles, Tom. The Queen's dying tonight. Catherine's on the scaffold. The Queen's dying and nobody's doing anything about it. She has such a pretty neck.
Your Highness?
Yes, yes.
Whiskey, Your Highness.
Ah, that's good. That's fine. That's hotter than the fire inside me. Give me some more. Keep the glass filled, Kingston. Norfolk, when is it to be? When does she die?
When the cannon is fired, Your Highness.
A sword! Give me a sword! I shall kill her myself! I shall hack her to pieces! I shall kill her with my own hands!
She's dying on the block,
I'll kill her myself!
She'll be dead in a moment.
Give me a sword, huh? Who holds me back? I'm a king! I'm a king, I say!
Your Highness!
Your Highness!
I always called her my rose. My rose without a thorn. Kingston, keep my glass filled. Keep it filled, I tell you. Ah, Woolsey. Woolsey. Why don't some of you get Woolsey?
Cardinal Woolsey is dead, Your Highness.
Yes, dead. Woolsey's dead. I remember. Woolsey's dead. A great man, but he wasn't honest.
With the page dropped a tray, Harry.
I thought it was the cannon. That cannon. The cannon. Odds, nails. Another drink. Tom, did I kill Woolsey?
No, Harry. He died.
Yes, I remember he died. In disgrace. That was Anne's doing. Anne Bullen's. And Moore, too. Sir Thomas Moore. Anne got his head, too. That's really why I had Anne Bullen's head cut off, Tom. She murdered those two great men. Kingston, You know my lord of Norfolk here, don't you?
Why, yes, your highness.
If I should ever order Norfolk to the Tower, Kingston, don't execute him right away. Norfolk's an old friend. Keep him a while. I might change my mind. But don't set him free, neither. I might change my mind again. Come. Where's the Queen?
Why, doesn't your highness remember? When the cannon is fired off,
No, I don't mean her. I don't mean her. I mean the real Queen. Not any of these wenches I've married since she left. Catherine of Aragon. Where's she living? What castle is she in? I'm going to her. Horses! Horses! Odds, nails, can't any of you hear me? Horses, I say. Where is she, I say? Where's the Queen?
She's dead, Harry.
Yes. Dead. Dead. I remember now. I didn't like her. She used to make me shirts, but she was decent. She was a lady. She used to help me out of scrapes. Is Cromwell dead, too?
Yes, Your Highness.
Yes. Dead. Dead. I remember now. Seems as if everybody of any importance is dead except God and me. Tom, wasn't I married to a Dutch woman once?
Yes, Harry, Anne of Cleves.
Yeah, the great big Dutch cart horse of a woman. She used to eat onions and cabbage and belch all night. Did I kill her?
You divorced her, Harry.
I wonder why I didn't kill her. Kingston, fill me glass. Why is everybody so solemn? Hodge, buddy, let them have you some music. Music, I say. Kingston, go bid the musicians play.
Yes, Your Highness.
Come. You suppose God is lonely?
I've never thought about it, Harry.
I have. All that power. What does it feel like, Tom, not to be a king?
Why, I've never thought, Harry.
I've always been one, Tom. For nearly 40 years. All that power. I'm lonely. I've killed a lot of people, too. A lot of people.
Well, kings do, Harry.
Yes, but most of them stuck their necks out for it. Well, I suppose I've made mistakes, Tom. But I think, on the whole, I've been a good man. Stop it! Music! I thought it was the cannon. A cannon! Oh, Tom. Charles. I'm going to stop it. She shan't die. I can't stand it. I'm going to save her. Wolsey! Moore! Cromwell! Save her! Save her! I don't care what she did. Kingston! Horses! She shan't die!
No,
she must die.
My rose without a thorn.
You can't have any more such women for queens, Harry. England won't stand it.
Yes, yes, England. I must always think of England. Yes, she's wicked. She's a wicked woman. Oh, but how wonderfully wicked. But I'm old now. I'm old.
Not you, Harry. You're in your prime.
Yes, Charles, old. An old man. Life's almost over.
Not for many years, Harry.
They say it's over in a flash. The big axe doesn't hurt much if the headsman knows his business. You won't hurt her, will it, Charles? Will it, Tom?
She'll never feel it, Harry.
She's your niece, Tom.
Yes. The second of my nieces to go like this.
I've had two queens from your family, Tom. Heaven knows how many sweethearts.
Yes, Harry. We've always been a loyal family.
Women. They always make trouble. Tom.
Yes, Harry.
Tom, I don't care anything about women anymore.
I can understand that, Harry.
Who's that girl over there?
Lady Latimer, Your Highness.
Lord Parr's daughter, Catherine Parr?
Yes, Harry.
She's a beautiful girl. She's a good girl, too, isn't she, Tom?
Indeed she is, Harry.
Come hither, sweetheart. Come here. Sit here, my knee.
Yes, sire.
Catherine Parr. She isn't one of your nieces, is she, Tom?
No, Your Highness.
You're a good girl, aren't you, Catherine?
I hope so, Your Highness.
Ah, then kiss me, sweetheart. That was a wicked woman, sweetheart. Music! Wine! A mask! All right! A music! Mask! All right!
Kimbamba,
Kimbamba,
elefante mono cabra habali, Kimbamba,
Kimbamba,
Kimbamba, hey, ah, hey, ah, hey, bamboo, kalambu, bamboo, hey, bamboo, kalambu, are you, hey. Sierra el Guete, cantando su canto bembe, bambú, calambú, bambú, hey, bambú, calambú, ay, hey, kimbamba,
kimbamba,
hembro rosa, pelo negro, colibrí, kimbamba,
kimbamba,
elefante, mono, cabra, ebali, kimbamba,
kimbamba,
kimbamba. Our Mr. McNamee in an April mood.
The kind that's made with
arrowroot, and that is why it is so...
Driver may make him turn his head. He must watch the traffic lights. Are they green or red? People who are walking, he has to watch them too. But if you keep on talking, he'll be watching you. So try to hold your chatter. Let him concentrate. Does it really matter? Won't your question wait? Try to help the driver. Use some common sense. And you may help to save us from many an accident. Oh! Don't forget to order your copy of this week's Song of Safety tonight. Next week, another fine cast headed by another actor of world importance on the spoken stage, Mr. Arthur Byron, who will be heard in an entirely unusual drama by Stephen Vincent Vanney. The Valley Company continues on at Lowell State, and Tommy Riggs goes on to Detroit at the Michigan Theater. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
is the National Broadcasting Company.